Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Test Podcast here on Sin. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi, and alongside me for the first time this year on the podcast, we have Lucy Watkin.
Hello.
Hello, Lucy, and you are the new EP for the Sports Test this season. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm very well, thank you. Very excited to be doing this.
And we've got something new as well.
Yeah, we do. We have something new. We're going to bring the decision desk to the podcast. So why don't you explain it a little bit, Ben?
So last season, if you remember, Austin and myself, at the end of the podcast, we would do a segment called Decision Desk, and that would be where we asked ourselves a series of questions, yes or no answers, and then we would go and elaborate on why we chose yes or no. So for this year, for this year's podcast, we're going to be doing that for the whole show. So it's going to be a debate, you could say, but it's going to be a couple of controversial questions, and it's really good that we are actually doing it on this week, because there's been so much sport that's been happening over the summer, and it's quite an ironic time to start the Sports Says podcast with this full-on segment of Decision Desk.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Decision Desk will be a good way for us to maybe give an insight behind the sports. It's not just results and winners and losers and best ofs and things, but, you know, what we think. I think that's a nice way to do this podcast.
Exactly. And it's gonna work in... In part with the live shows, the Monday and Friday. So Monday and Friday we'll do all the live stuff, all the scores, whereas we'll delve into the real hard talking issues in this world of sports. So Lucy, I think we'll start it off with some tennis and the Davis Cup this week. Australia defeated Czech Republic 4-1. So we move on now to the quarterfinal stage to take on the USA in April, I believe it is. So we'll start off with a member of the squad who wasn't in participation this week at Kyong, Bernard Tomic. Mm. Now, Leighton Hewitt, he came up with some comments during the week that Tomic will never, I'll repeat that again, never reach his potential. So, will Tomic ever win the Aussie fans over?
No. I think because, one, he's been eclipsed by Kyrgios now, I think, for better or for worse. Kyrgios has eclipsed him. And to be honest with you, I think I agree with Leighton Hewitt in that I think earlier in his career, he was too arrogant to sort of step up. And I think his arrogance downplayed his abilities and also just annoyed the Australian public, which I think is very much the same route that Kyrgios is taking now. Yeah. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, Tomic, he burst onto the scene basically. He's a 17-year-old making his debut in the Australian Open, and now he's 24. Yes, he is world number 16, and his dad quite rightly pointed out that he came back from, world number 116, somewhere around that, and came back to number 16 on his own with his father as coach. And obviously, there's been a bit of tension between John Tomic, the Tomics in general, and Tennis Australia, with Tennis Australia quite emphatically, they cut the funding for, I think it was his daughter, John Tomic's daughter, Bernard Tomic's sister. So there's always been a bit of tension between there. But Tomic in general, I mean, you can just tell by the way he plays his tennis. He's just lackluster. He's really lazy. He doesn't move his feet. I mean, yes, that's his style, but is that what has been, I think it was Jim Courier who said it in the Australian Open just a couple of weeks ago in the commentary, that perhaps his training from his father may have deterred his development, because John Tomic, his training regime was very, very hard on and very tough on Bernard Tomic. So perhaps that's why we see he's sort of lethargic on the court, just trying to hit it back, because he would consistently hit the ball constantly every day. I think it was on hours and hours. So perhaps that's why we see that style where he doesn't move his feet, just tries to get it back in court, a couple of slices. It's good. It's a good style, but he just doesn't move around. And it does come down to fitness as well. That's been an issue with Kyrgios. And like Kyrgios has said, he's gotten a coach now, and we've seen glimpses from him, and Kyrgios, we'll talk about him another day because I'm so passionate about him. But back with Tomic, I don't see it unless he gets perhaps another coach, a better fitness trainer if he's already got one. I'm not sure, but it doesn't look good for Tomic for me.
No, it's definitely just the fact that he came in when he was 17 and probably, as you said, training really hard, bad habits. They don't go away. And unless you do something drastic to change, 24 as well, he should be hitting his prime. And if he's not doing it now, then it'd be hard for him to win over any kind of fans. Sorry, Bernard Tomic.
All right, we both agree on that. Okay, we'll move on to cricket now. And early in the week, it was Monday, Australia and New Zealand. Now, that was the first of the three-match ODI series. Unfortunately, Australia lost the Chappell Hadley Trophy earlier today, in fact, with another loss against New Zealand. But this was at Eden Park, and it hasn't been a very happy hunting ground for any Australian sporting team, particularly the Wallabies of late, and obviously our cricket team. So we were down and out. I think we were about 7-8 down, and then Stoinis, unbelievably, almost got us back within the match. We were trailing by around 100 runs, and he got us to within six runs of tying the match, seven runs of winning it. And unfortunately, Josh Hazlewood got run out off. It was a beautiful fielding placement from Captain Kane Williamson, fielding at short, mid, on. So Stoinis almost got the win for us. He scored a ton, 140-odd. So should we see him get a test call up with the news around Mitch Marsh getting dropped as the all rounder for the Australian Test team?
My call at the moment is no, but I think that could change in the future. That's how Fair I feel enough, about yep. Marcus Stoinis. I think 142, it's not enough to sort of get you into the lines of the selectors. He did score 42 today. So he was another, I think, one of the either first or second highest score today again. He's performed well in the Sheffield Shield, had an atrocious BBL season. So I think at the moment he sort of lacks a little bit of consistency. So it'd be good to see him start making consistent scores, especially in Sheffield Shield. But I reckon that this 100 definitely helps his case. It sort of gets the eyes on him. What do you think?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, I do want Stoinis to get in the test squad. I mean, I think it's been around for maybe 2-3 years that we've been wanting him to get in the squad, because he has been producing really good performances in the Sheffield Shield. And yeah, Big Bash, not really his strong suit, but he can bash it around, like we saw in that ODI smashing, I think it was 11 sixes. So it was a really good finish by him. But yeah, at the moment, it's going to be hard to see him break it. But I mean, with the amount of changes that's going with the test squad, anything could really happen. So yeah. If Stoinis does get a call up, if he is going to get a call up, I'd say it'd be in the next year or so. And that's been largely due to the fact that he did move from WA, I think it was maybe 3-4 years ago, to Victoria, changed his career around because he didn't get a go at WA. So it's been a good move from him to Victoria. We're very happy as Victorians to have him along. And yeah, I reckon one day he will get into the test squad, because it's going to be pretty hard to see Mitch Marsh breaking in at the moment, because the way the test squad is going, the way it's shaping.
And the way Mitch Marsh played as well, just he wasn't consistent either, and he threw it away for himself, that's what I think. To see Marcus Stoinis succeed in for Victoria a bit more, to bring some consistency to his game, I think he's definitely a chance for a call up one day. And I think we got another cricket question, and this one is, are we likely to see anyone else over 35 get picked or recalled for an Australian team? A question that's kind of been inspired by Michael Klinger's call-up to the Australian T20 squad after he had an absolute blinder of a BBL season, scoring a century in the final, did he?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah, it was not out, I know that.
Not out, yeah. And bit of emotional scenes, I think, for him. He had teared up a little bit on the phone when he got the call up. So what do you think of that question?
In short, no. Yeah. But I would like to say, because the amount of players over, well, in that 30, 35 age bracket who have been performing very well at domestic, in Australian domestic cricket, it's astounding. So one that comes to mind is Cameron White, who's been underdone. He obviously did play for Australia early on in his career in the one dayers, but he's been very, very good. He's had very good form for the Victorians in the Matador Cup. This season, obviously, hasn't had that much. But in previous seasons, he's been the highest run scorer, highest averages, and not get a call-up in the Australian ODI team. So that's just one example. Another example, Brad Hodge, another very good performer, over 30, Sheffield Shield, not getting called up. And Klinger's if he hadn't been picked, he would have been the first one to go. Yeah. And he's been extremely consistent at Sheffield Shield level, one-day cup and one-day matches, and as you could see in the Big Bash.
Yeah.
So it's about time that he got his T20 call-up. But with the way Australian cricket's shaping, the way the selectors are picking their squads, they're just basically having an eye for future World Cups, future Test Series, and it's particularly even more prevalent in the Australian test team. I mean, bringing, I think it was maybe five to eight changes it was. One of the biggest overhauls we've seen in Australian test cricket history to a squad. So it's all this young talent. It's great to see, but, I mean, if you're doing well, if you're performing well at Sheffield Shield or domestic level, I mean, doesn't that warrant a call up? I think it does. So, unfortunately, no, but I would like to personally say it.
I did see David Hussey say that we should be selecting on their performances, not their potential.
Yeah.
Which I think I definitely can agree with.
And with potential, I think that was the major decision behind Nick Mattinson getting in the squad, because he had not performed well at all in the Sheffield Shield. I mean, in previous years, I think he'd only averaged maybe 25, 27, around that mark. And even at the time that he was picked, he was only averaging around that mark. And as the Australian selectors said, they basically said that, oh, we've picked him because he's got a huge upside. He's got a huge potential. So Mattinson, he bombed out. So to back Hussey's point up, that's a prime example. Mattinson, we know he's going to be a star in the making, but you've just picked him on potential. I mean, get someone in who's performed well, who's making the runs in the Sheffield Shield, given what they deserve, basically.
Another example is Steve Smith. They did the exact same thing with him. Picked him too early, then dropped him, then brought him back.
And they picked him as a leggy as well.
So I think exposure is nice, but until they can prove that they can perform, then that's when you make them a long-standing sort of person in the team.
And even Ashton Agar, remember he debuted in, 2013 Ashes as a 19-year-old. He scored 99 there in Trent Bridge, or I think it was Lords. And, yeah, he hasn't broken back into the Aussie squad since then. So that's an example of what can actually, or what's the opposite that could happen to Steve Smith. So hopefully Mattinson doesn't go that way, but Agar's more of an all-rounder. He should be back in the test squad, hopefully, in the near future. So, but, yeah, that's just an example of maybe throwing them in the limelight too early before their time. So
I think that Ashton Agar question is a good question for another day. To be honest.
We'll come back to that. There's so much that we can come back to this. We're looking forward to many more good podcasts. So we'll move on to one final cricket question. And early in the week, we saw a couple of highlights on cricket.com.au. So it was about the Duke ball. The Duke ball, if you don't know, is the ball that is used in England, or it's basically used around the world except Australia for test matches. We use, obviously, the Kookaburra ball. Now, the major differences are the Duke ball swings more, and that is because it is a lot lighter than the Kookaburra ball. And we saw Michael Neeser from Queensland bowl a ball. It started off mid-pitch, maybe 6-7 stump outside off, and he ended up bowling a Yorker that hit middle and leg.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine that, that's probably about maybe 1.5 to 2 metres of swing.
That's...
in the air.
That's a lot.
Now with all the debate about bat v ball, how bats are just going, they're making them massive,
makes them wide and thick.
So are we going to see Australian matches use the Duke ball permanently from now on to try and bridge that gap between the bat v ball?
No.
Okay.
I think they're using it in the proper sense, in that they're using the Duke ball to adapt to certain conditions. And I saw that it was sort of pointed out that it's an advantage of the English that they have the Duke ball. And I think we should keep the Kookaburra ball in our international matches and things like that as our advantage. And as it's sort of like our stamp as well. Like, you don't want to, like, Australia v England, like, it's just another thing. You don't want to be using their ball. Like, we want to use our own. That's how I feel about that. But I think they are using it in the right way, that they're using it to adapt to conditions, especially in England, where we haven't won the Ashes there in a long, long time, I think. I think it was in my lifetime that I saw them lose it in England, and they haven't won it back. So, the legacy of Ricky Ponting. But what do you think, Ben?
Yeah, when you put it that way, I was actually going to say that maybe we should use the Duke ball, but yeah, we kind of do want that advantage. I mean, that's what Australian cricket has been known of late, like the bouncy pitches, not really the swing. So it's more the intimidation factor that we've been known for. So it's our own, it's our Kookaburra ball, so why not keep it? There's no point getting out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now we'll move on to some AFL and the Women's League. has started with a bang. And Lucy, you are all over it. You were covering it with Carlton. You were a writer there, I believe. So we'll start off with a question about the crowds. And there was a lockout on the Friday night match, the debut match between Carlton and Collingwood. I think it was over 24,025 at
Icon Park. Yeah.
And there was thousands locked out of the match, in fact. So are the crowds sustainable, first of all?
Yep.
And are they good enough to play a grand final at the MCG?
Two good questions. The first one is sustainable, yes. Good enough, yes. Definitely good enough, but I think a grand final at the MCG depends on the teams. Two Victorian teams.
Well, if we get Carlton v Collingwood, it's unlikely.
Yeah,
but if we do, then you could seriously see it happen.
Seriously, I'm hoping for a Carlton Western Bulldogs grand final.
Yeah. That's this probably weekend, the most likely, yeah.
They've looked the strongest. In terms of the crowd being sustainable, they're definitely sustainable if the AFL does this right. At the moment, watching the games, I'm obviously the biggest proponent for the AFLW. Play it myself. Would love to get drafted. Love the girls. They've impressed me so far. But I was at the game last night at Witten Oval, and I just really noticed some of the mistakes that Fremantle was making, which is they had to travel to Victoria, first game, massive hype. It did look a bit like they were a bit stunned and everything like that. But it also comes down to the fact that these girls aren't professional athletes yet.
Yeah.
That they're only training three times a week. They're not being paid, quite frankly, enough for what they're doing. And so, like the men's league, if the AFL pumped more money into it so the girls can train properly more than three times a week and longer than 3 hours, those three sessions a week, I definitely think you will see the quality of the game increase. And with the quality of the game increasing, you'll see the crowds still come. That's what I think anyway.
Yeah, that was the thing that caught my eye when I was watching the women's matches on the telly. I mean, it was just very contested. And, I mean, we haven't seen that in a while in the AFL, but you can see them there clean around the footy. They'll get it out. They'll run. And that's probably one of the major differences that we've been seeing with the men's and the women's. And I agree with you. It's actually going to take a while because they're not, like you said, they're not professional athletes. So it's going to take time for them to get all that fitness up to scratch and, basically get their skills to a level where they can compete with the best, because they probably haven't. There's been a lot of exhibition games last year most of the time, but it's going to take a while for them to get used to consistently week on week competing against the best that we have in the country. And there's probably a lot more who we haven't seen.
Them.
So first thing the AFL's probably got to do is introduce a couple of more teams. For me, anyway, to get some more talent out there.
Yeah.
Like you said, more funding, it's essential.
Yeah.
That's essential for any sporting organisation to reach its peak. And if the AFL can do that at the start, then this women's league can go anywhere. And you can see the potential already. I mean, like you saw with the interest in the game, it's there. The interest is there. And girls love footy. Yeah. I mean, I umpire footy. I love umpiring the girls because they go really hard at it.
Yeah.
It's great fun. It's great fun to watch, and we could see it. We could definitely see it sustaining for maybe 10, 20 years, even further. And it's great that it's actually AFL clubs because you've got your team, your men's team, and you can go support your women's team. So that's just that's perfect, and that's already you've already got all their memberships, all those supporters from the men's team supporting the women's team. So you don't have to worry about really growing it that much as say. Maybe like an A-League, for example, when they started back up, they wanted to get some fans on their squads. Yeah. These teams, you've already got their supporters, and you can grow even more from that.
This is like cultivating. Not so much growing something, but just cultivating it. Make sure that you can keep people's interest and work with people's interest. But, one of those things that really astounded me on Friday night at the Carlton-Collingwood game was the passion. Like, even for myself, like, it was a hugely emotional night for so many people, and for particularly a lot of women and a lot of girls. Like, for me to see women AFL players out there with all of those people around, like, it just, like, it gave me goosebumps, makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. Like, never in my lifetime did I probably ever think I would see that. And there I was. So if they can hold on to that and they can fully use that passion that the fans have, cultivate it properly and treat it also with a little bit of respect, the crowds are definitely sustainable. That's what I think. Yeah.
Okay. Now, we'll stick with one more AFL question. Now, I know it's a bit early, but of the marquee players, is Mo Hope the most overhyped? And we saw her sort of blow out in that game against Carlton Collingwood. Not, she only got a couple of touches, and when she did get near the ball, she sort of flunked it and didn't look too comfortable on the big stage. So is she the most overhyped out of the marquee players in the AFLW?
I feel a bit mean saying it, but yes. I think, unfortunately, at this level that they're at now, it's pretty easy to shut her down, especially when it looked like Collingwood at the moment don't have another avenue towards goal. Even though they did have Garner kick the first goal of the game, I think that was a bit of a luck on their part. So I think if any team can shut Mo Hope down,
you shut Collingwood down.
You shut Collingwood down. And in saying that, with the other marquees such as Bree Davey and Darcy Vesio for Carlton, who, not being biased, absolutely starred. Vesio with four goals.
They were extremely good.
Bree Davey just running everywhere and being amazing.
Vesio was very clean around the footy as well. She was, I guess, the AFL player, the men's player that you could compare it to, I thought, watching her, was Pendlebury.
Yeah.
She was just extremely smooth. She found space. So, yes, like you said, she was very good. She lived up to her marquee status, basically. Mm.
She's definitely a cut above Darcy Vesio. And then you saw Katie Brennan last night. Like, every single time the ball went to the forward line yesterday, you were just like, oh, there's Katie Brennan. Like, that's how that felt. Unfortunately, GWS have lost both their marquee players. I think one in Brisbane's injured. But Erin Phillips for Adelaide, she was everywhere as well. She starred, kicked an amazing goal after getting her head almost taken off by one of the GWS girls. So I think Mo Hope is definitely hyped. I think we're yet to see her best as well. And I think we're yet to see the rest of the players' best. Because then you have other players like Bianca Jacobson for Carlton, who looked composed and confident, and every single time you got the ball, you knew it was in a sure set of hands in Bianca Jacobson. So there's so many good players. So I think Mo Hope might just be a little bit overhyped. What do you think?
I'm going to say no, just basically on the fact that it's a bit early. I mean, it's one match, but the thing you could argue, though, is remember the game against Western Bulldogs, Melbourne, last season? She was playing for the Doggies, and she kicked six goals, was it?
Yeah, six goals.
Yeah, she kicked six goals, and that was on a pretty big stage as well. So she has performed on the big stage, so maybe the 24,000 crowd, you could say, was perhaps a deterring factor for her. So we won't know yet. So I reckon maybe give her a couple of rounds to see, because after that game against the Doggies in Melbourne, she was just hyped up massively.
Massive,
and maybe that got to her, because, like we said, these women, they're not professional athletes. They're not used to the media, the limelight, the crowds. So it's going to take them a while to get used to it. We saw a couple of players they were able to get used to, but I think the majority are going to have struggled this season, and we're going to see that in the quality of the football, like we said before.
Yeah.
So I think give Mo Hope a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I think, yeah.
Pardon the pun.
Part of me thought there was so many of them on Friday night, just so many bad puns. But I think with Mo Hope, it was a little bit of the Ronda Rousey factor before she lost to that Australian girl. Like, it was a bit like she was everywhere. She was doing so much that I think she wasn't able to focus on her footy. So hopefully she gets some time to bounce back. And, I hope she doesn't disappoint Susan Alberti, because she's a beautiful old lady. So moving on to the next sport, and we've got an NBA question, which is Ben's specialty, I believe. And the question is, are the Warriors the most entertaining team we've seen in the NBA for a while? And you sort of flagged the Lakers of 84-85, the Showtime era, as sort of the comparison.
Yeah.
So what do you think behind that?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. The Lakers, the 84-85 Lakers, they were known as the Showtime Lakers.
Yeah.
And they were led predominantly by Magic Johnson. And they were basically the Warriors before the Warriors.
Okay,
and in saying the Warriors before the Warriors, I think that pretty much answers my question, that the Warriors are the most entertaining team we have ever seen in the NBA, if you compare them to Golden State. And, I mean, when you got players like Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, I mean, that Kevin Durant move to Golden State was the biggest, well, you could say LeBron's move to Miami was bigger, but in terms of today, Kevin Durant's move to the Golden State Warriors, I mean, the circumstances that he left Oklahoma City, I mean, Oklahoma City, they had a 3-1 lead in the, and we've heard 3-1 leads so many times in the NBA with relation to the Golden State Warriors, but they had a 3-1 lead, 3-1 series lead against the Warriors, and they blew it.
Yeah.
And Kevin Durant, instead of usually what champions do, they fight that team. They come back the next season and write, okay, we're going to beat the Warriors. But no, instead Durant signed up with the Warriors. So that's why the move with Durant was so highly speculated. So,
yeah.
But he is one of the greatest three-point shooters in the league at the moment, as same with Steph Curry.
Yep.
They got Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. They all bring flair to the game. Zaza Pachulia. He's from Georgia. Yeah, it's a very interesting name. And yes, he's in their lineup, and he was voted by the fans as an all-star, but he does bring some a little bit of flair to their team. But the Warriors, yes, we've seen them. They've basically changed the way basketball's played, more predominantly Steph Curry, but they have changed the way we've seen basketball play, more offense, more three-pointers shot. So for me, they are the most entertaining NBA team we have ever seen in history.
Yeah, I can't say I've watched enough NBA to comment on this enough, but I think the sheer star power that Steph Curry has in terms of someone like me who doesn't follow NBA that much, but I've seen so much of him, and like, so I think even that enough just tells you how entertaining they could possibly be. Just like how anyone's probably heard about Magic Johnson. Those entertaining players, like, it's always a sign when they sort of transcend their own sport and find their way to just regular sports fans. So without knowing much, I think I can agree with you for sure. Yeah.
All right, we'll try and breeze through pretty quickly these last couple of questions. So we'll stick with basketball, but we'll go back to Australia now. And in the NBL, our boys, Melbourne United, it has been such a tight season. And only a couple of weeks ago, there were two matches separating top from bottom. So at the moment, United, they sit two wins away from cracking the second spot, because the Adelaide 36ers, they've already locked up first place. They take on Illawarra tomorrow night. Then they've got New Zealand away next week, and then they host Perth. So do you reckon United will make the NBL finals?
No. I think they're just a little bit too away. You know, they've got, if they beat Illawarra, can't talk, if they can beat Illawarra, then I think they're definitely a chance. But if they drop that game, then no.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, Illawarra, they are the second place team. So that's a team we are two wins behind. And Illawarra, they're such a predominant offensive team. So if we can, and that's the same with United though. So it's basically going to be a very high scoring match tomorrow night. And if United do win that, I say they do make the finals.
Yeah.
If not, then I agree with you, they won't. So that wraps up basketball now. We'll move on to soccer. And last night, the Melbourne Derby was quite phenomenal victory, winning that 2-1. Tim Cahill, quite controversially, copped a red card before he even took the field.
Got on the field.
Now, was that red card fair?
No, because I've never heard of someone being sent off when they're not on the field. So you can't even say they were sent off. They were just kept off the field. They were kept off the field. And also without knowing what he said as well. It's hard to comment on.
Yeah, they've just said duress, so we don't really know.
So you don't really know
exactly.
It's
what
not
happened.
Like how the goalkeeper is going to be city goalkeeper is going to be penalised for a racial slur. Like, it's not like something like that's come out. So I'm going to say he probably no.
Yeah.
What about you?
I reckon just a yellow. I mean, let him play.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim Cahill's such a major draw card for the A League, for Melbourne City in particular, and to get him on the field in the Melbourne Derby is quite, you really want that to happen, and particularly with City, I think you mentioned earlier, they've got a lot of players. I think it was up to 8 players who may be unavailable for the remaining rounds of the season, and with finals coming around the corner, I mean, Cahill's essential to them, so City don't really want to lose many more players. But Cahill with his draw card, and he may have said something bad, but just give him a yellow.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't even stepped foot in the field, so I don't think that really warranted a red card. But again, we can't really comment because we don't really know what
he said. Yeah.
So that's a bit up in the air.
Yeah. But classic Cahill, just has to have a moment in any derby. It was the last derby. He kicked that amazing goal.
Yeah.
So star power for the good reasons in the last derby and all the wrong ones.
He's always a story. Yeah. He's always the headline act, even when he's not on the field.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's what you get with Tim Cahill.
Mm.
And finally, the big show in America, the NFL Super Bowl 51 takes place tomorrow in Houston between the New Orleans Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons. Lucy, who's your pick?
I'm going to say Patriots. Tom Brady, simply too good. Plus, they've won the Super Bowl 4 times. So I feel like experience will help them a lot. And the fact that Atlanta has never won it before, I think Patriots will definitely get up. But the more important thing that I want to put out there is that Lady Gaga will not have the best halftime show of all time. Because
I hope so as well, yeah.
Because Beyonce took that crown, I think, 3 years ago. So hopefully the game is good because the halftime show will be a bit lackluster. Yeah.
All right, you heard it here first. My pick, yes, as well as the Patriots. I mean, that experience is just talks for itself. Atlanta, they've got none. And also an interesting stat here, Matt Ryan, he's the quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons. Mm. He was named the NFL's most valuable player for 2016.
Mm.
And for the past 10 years, I believe it is, or since 2003, 2002, the MVPs who have played in the Super Bowl have gone 0-7. I'll repeat that again. They have not won a Super Bowl, the MVP for their team. 0-7. Ooh. 7 losses, that is. So history is not on Matt Ryan's side. Mm. Experience as well is not on the Falcons' side. So
yeah.
I think all the positive directions are going the way of the Patriots. And I think they will win. I think they'll win the Super Bowl.
Me too. Yeah.
So that pretty much wraps it up for this week's edition of the Sports Desk podcast. We may rename it now to just Decision Desk. We'll see how we go.
Yeah.
Because we've just done a lot of questions, a lot of hard-hitting questions. So if you want, we're going to upload the show on Omni and YouTube. You can send us some questions that you want us to ask, perhaps.
Yes.
Maybe some topics. So we'll be debating those in a fortnight's time. So give us all you want, all the questions you need, and we will talk about it here on the Decision Desk.
Yeah, it's a great show, actually. I like this. like this new format. Get to answer some controversial questions and everything. So, yeah. Send us a question, like, for sure. We're on Facebook. Just search the Sports Desk in your little search bar. You'll find us. Find us on the SIN website. So, yeah, tune in a fortnight time. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you, guys. And also don't forget to tune into the Monday and Friday teams. They are from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on SIN 90.7. So you can also listen to those. We'll have the podcast up on Omni soon and as well on YouTube. So do tune in on our social media platforms. Send us your questions in and in a fortnight time. That's it for the Sports Desk podcast this week, where all we do is talk sport, the games which unite the people of the world.